Things were interesting enough for the Tennessee Titans during the legal tampering period early this week when NFL teams were allowed to negotiate free agent contracts but not actually sign the players to them. And then the signing period came Wednesday afternoon, and things got really exciting for Tennessee Titans fans when the news broke that they had agreed to a deal with wide receiver Calvin Ridley, who according to some was the best wide receiver available this year. According to many, was the best player who had not come to terms on a contract at that point. And I think the idea of Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins together suddenly makes the Titans offense look a little more potent for in the eyes of pretty much anybody. I don't know how you could see it otherwise, but so let's not hesitate. Let's get right into this episode of Believe in Titans with the usual lineup. I am David Beauclair, former Titans cornerback Denard Walker, John Glennon of the Nashville Post. We are all here. Denard, what was your reaction to the Calvin Ridley news first off?
Well, David, I don't use profanity. I try not to anymore unless someone makes me real mad. But $50 million guaranteed, I would say the word ham. Wow. I did not see that coming. I mean, nine was it 90? Well, I don't look at the 92 million. I look at the $50 million guaranteed. But and most people had him ranked number one. I had Brandon Ayuk. That was the guy that I thought at least they would make a run in free agency and get that kind of money, because you got to think about it. He's younger. Calvin's what, 29 years old? And if I know he, he had an emergence last year in Jacksonville, but I didn't see them paying Calvin Ridley that kind of money. I didn't see that coming, to be honest with you.
John Glennon, what about it? It seemed like Rand Carthen's approach was going to be sort of, I mean, he was spending money, but he wasn't spending money crazy. Is 4 years, $92 million with 56, whatever it is, point whatever guaranteed. Is that crazy money, or is that a good deal for the Titans?
It's a little crazy, but I think, the Titans unfortunately are in a situation where they were pretty desperate to have another wide receiver, and you combine that with the fact that they did have a lot of money to spend. All right, if you've got that kind of money and you have that kind of need, well, hey, there you go. Go ahead and get your guy. And you almost got the sense, all the reports that we were hearing initially were like, he's going to go back to Jacksonville. No, he might go to New England. Oh, he might be Jacksonville. Oh, he might be New England. And then, boom, seemingly out of nowhere, the Titans land him. And it was almost like Rand Carthen and the agent were kind of like, okay, do what you want with New England and Jacksonville. Get your best price out of there. And I'll probably give you about 10 more million than those guys can do it. Yeah, it's just speculation, but that's what it seemed like anyway. But in what they get from Calvin Ridley, I think he fits in a lot of ways. What does Will Levis do best? He's a strong arm, deep throwing guy. Calvin Ridley brings that speed. He can take the top off defenses. He can get downfield. That should work very well there. Brian Callahan. What does Brian Callahan like to do in his offenses? Seemingly, likes to throw the ball. Obviously, now you got DeAndre Hopkins and Calvin Ridley and Treylon Burks. We're going to see them throwing the ball quite a bit more than what we have seen in the past. It makes DeAndre Hopkins a better receiver too, obviously, because it's going to take a lot of attention away from DeAndre Hopkins. It's going to give him more room to work the middle of the field, where Calvin Ridley is more of a perimeter guy and as we said, can get down the field and threaten defensively that way. So did they spend a ton of money? Yes, they did. Is it a little bit seemingly loony? Probably so. But if you've got it and you've got a need, this is the time to put the money out there for them.
Yeah, I've talked to scouts in multiple sports over the years, and that's the one thing that is common across, I think, all the pro sports leagues, that if you have the money to spend, you might as well go ahead and overpay for somebody, because that's probably what it's going to take to get them. Have they overpaid for Calvin Ridley? If they have, how much? So I don't know. I mean, this is a guy who was, he's a first round draft pick. He's had 2,000 yard seasons. He's had his moments. Yes, he missed a whole year based on a league-wide suspension. Maybe he's still rounding back into form and maybe building that kind of momentum on his career. But I agree with you, John. It feels like that Rand Carthen said, okay, whatever kind of deal you get, I've got the money, I'll beat it. Let's get him in here. And let's face it, it hasn't been that long ago. We saw what a young emerging AJ Brown and Corey Davis in the best season of his career. We saw what those two guys could do together. I mean, anybody contradict me here if you think so, but DeAndre Hopkins and Calvin Ridley is a better pair than a young AJ Brown and Corey Davis at his best, right? No, you don't think so, Denard?
We haven't, well, yeah, on paper, but let's just be honest with you. A lot of that's going to be settled, for this upcoming season. But you got to also look at the age. Is it a 4-year deal, right? I
Yeah.
understand. So if it's a 4-year deal, he's 29 years old. So do you think that's so what, 32 if he can get through the 4 years of this contract? And then you had a player, let's say like Brandon Ayuk, who's only 25. So if I'm going to pay that kind of money, yeah, AJ Brown was still young. And so you got to take that in consideration too. Do you think that he's going to still be rolling like this at 31, 32? Do you think that over the next 4 years he's going to be productive? Or would you want to go get a younger player that has had back-to-back season and is only getting better?
I mean, I'm not gonna argue. Brandon Ayuk wouldn't be good. Maybe Brandon Ayuk has said he's not interested. But I, in terms of what this possibly can be, I just think that Ridley is more dangerous than Corey Davis was at that point. I think Hopkins is similar to Brown in terms of the ability to make contested catches and whatnot. And plus his experience right now and what we saw last year. I think there's a lot to be said for this pairing. Certainly, John, it makes Will Levis's job a lot easier, right?
Yeah, it absolutely does. I was just gonna make one comment. I think Denard, I believe Ayuk actually is under contract, I think, for 2024. But he's not real happy with
Right.
his deal because he's wanted an extension. So I think there's been a lot of talk that the Titans, or not the Titans, but that Ayuk might be looking for a trade, because so that certainly he was not necessarily a free agent, but a guy who might be of interest to other teams. But anyway, yeah, I definitely think that Ridley makes Will Evans's job easier, again, because all right, A, he's creating another option. B, he's creating more space. He's driving the defenses back. He's opening up the field in the middle for guys like Hopkins, Treylon Burks, Chigo Conquo, guys like that. So does he come with some caution flags? Definitely. You talked about the fact that he was suspended for the year. The year before that, the reason he was betting on games the year before was because he had stepped away from the Falcons, mental health issues. He just said, look, I'm out for a while. And that's when he started doing some gambling. So, there are some cautions and concerns about Ridley, but you have to think also that Nick Holtz, the Titans' new offensive coordinator, was the passing game coordinator in Jacksonville last year. So you would have to think that the Nick Holtz probably signed off on Calvin Ridley saying, look, I'm okay with the guy, whatever flags there are, or it's worth signing him. So that's a good sign. And yeah, I just think there are too many good things about Ridley to pass on him, especially, you hate to be in a situation like the Titans were, where you're kind of desperate for another wide receiver, another good wide receiver. But that's where the Titans were. And again, as we've said, if you have the money and you have a big glaring need, hey, boom, go ahead, do it. Do what it takes to get your guy in there.
I'll ask this too. Last week, I think it was, we talked about wide receiver versus tackle at number 7 overall, or whenever the Titans ultimately end up picking in the first round of this draft. Denard, Is wide receiver still a possibility, or is it tackle all the way now?
It's tackle all the way, especially with that signing. That's too much money to go out in the first round and get another receiver. I mean, look, you didn't really shore up your offensive line. I know they did something in free agency, but you got to make a splash in this draft. In that pick number 7, you got to go out and get a great left tackle to protect Will. If you don't have the personnel to protect him, I don't care who you have to throw, you're not going to get the ball off. We saw that last year.
John, you agree with that?
I do, for the most part, and I am a little stronger on left tackle now than I was before. But I still wouldn't be absolutely stunned if they still, if a Neighbors is there, even Odunze is there. There's something to think about too for a guy like Brian Callahan, who's used to having, he's played, the last few years with Boyd and Higgins. And Ja'Marr Chase, obviously, wouldn't it be tempting for him to say, "Hey, I'd love to have DeAndre Hopkins, Calvin Ridley, Treylon Burks, and Rome Odunze. Oh my God, what kind of offense is that? Sure, we might get sacked 52 times, but the times we do complete passes, there's going to be a lot of yardage there." And you hear more now, maybe a little more speculation of could they even think about, now that they've got another wide receiver, could they even think about Brock Bowers a little bit more, the great tight end prospect out of Georgia? And I think maybe you could think about it a little bit more, but I still think, to me, that that's a, there's still too many holes on this team, glaring one certainly at left tackle, to kind of get that specialty pick of a tight end at number 7. So I still lean heavy left tackle. But I'm not completely ruling out a wide receiver.
Yeah, I asked that question because when I heard that was my first reaction was, well, okay, that means left tackle in the first round at number 7 there. But then I thought about it, and I've never forgotten too. You go back to 1998 and Randy Moss going to Minnesota when they had Chris Carter and Jake Reed, right? And everybody's like, why in the world would they want or need Randy Moss? And certainly, Moss, a generational talent, but that was a pretty dynamic trio they had going there for a while. And you look at, John, you make an excellent point when you're talking about Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and Tyler Boyd there in Cincinnati the last 3 years. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having three really good receivers in the same offense. And so I agree. I still think it's very much a possibility, but it kind of falls now into the discussion of, okay, what can you get in with your next pick? What do you feel? Do you feel confident there's going to be a good wide receiver there or a good tackle there? And maybe you go from there in terms of you sort of reverse and engineer the pick, if you will. But it certainly gives them options that I think, whereas before they needed, everything, and you just had to take whatever. Now you can sort of think this thing through a little bit better. But
David, can I ask you
let's
a
review.
question?
Go
You
ahead. What's that?
were talking about that trio at Cincinnati, but let's talk about the quarterback. He didn't finish the season this past year, right?
He did not,
He
and he
did
did
not.
not finish his rookie season either.
Exactly. So, and we saw what happened when they came to Nashville. I mean, if it wasn't for the kicker, they wouldn't have gotten out of here unscathed. But again, if you don't have no offensive line, and that's one thing Cincinnati did after that season. They came back and they went back and they got an offensive line to protect that quarterback. If you're not going to protect the quarterback, David, I don't care what kind of weapons you have on offense. Your quarterback, he's not going to last in this league for long.
I mean, I was just going to toss in one more point on that too. What Brian Callahan has said also, though, and I agree with you, Denard. I mean, I think that's vital as well. But Brian Callahan has mentioned too that another way to help with the sack problem is having wide receivers who can get open very quickly. So if you've got a couple of stud guys who are open quickly, that too reduces the opportunity to sack a quarterback too. But to me, not to as great a degree as having a stud left tackle that you can plug in there for the next 5, 6 years, whatever.
It, it, it's
That's
hard to
it.
believe if Joe Alt is there, or who's the guy from Penn State? Denard, you love him.
For Shamu.
Yeah, it's, yeah, Fasanu. I mean, it's hard. I mean, that could be the classic case of best player available and fits a need all in one. It's a slam dunk there. But that is a discussion for another day. Let's sort of recap what else has happened this week. The Titans signed cornerback Chidobe Awuzie, center Lloyd Cushenberry, linebacker Kenneth Murray, running back Tony Pollard, all accomplished, proven players in this league. They re-signed running back Julius Chestnut, tendered linebacker Jack Gibbons, guys who made this roster in recent years as undrafted free agents and have been contributors. And more recently, they have re-signed kicker Nick Foltz. Am I missing anything, John?
Cox, did you mention him? I may have missed it
Oh,
there.
Morgan Cox, right before free agency started. That's right. Long snapper Morgan Cox.
And NWI, did we mention NWI
No,
also?
and that is the latest thing. Thank you. Yes, I knew there was something else. Nick Westbrook-Akina has, much like last year, took a day or two and decided, nope, I want to come back. So he will be back in the fold. It's a pretty big haul, a pretty wide ranging haul. Oh, I forgot, excuse me, also backup quarterback Mason Rudolph. We've talked on here the need for a backup quarterback. Rudolph is somewhere between a proven commodity and a guy who you wonder about, but he's certainly been around, been in Pittsburgh, a guy who showed a little something late last season. Looks like he will be the number two behind Levis. Certainly not a guy I don't think who's going to be pushing Levis for the starting job, but does provide some measure of comfort, I guess, for the coaching staff. But I want to start with Lloyd Cushenberry. Denard, tell people about the number 18 at LSU and what that means.
The number 18, it signifies it's a player that represents the culture of Louisiana. It's a hard-nosed kid that basically came from nowhere and he worked his way to the top. It's a tribute to Jacob Hester. If you don't know that name, he's one of the most unheralded. He was a kid that played tailback, fullback, was a special team player for most of his career, and then his senior year, he just absolutely tore it up. And that number, it holds a lot of weight. So it's a way that we pay tribute down in Louisiana to Jacob Hester and what he was able to do, and that team ended up winning a national championship. So that's when you get a chance to wear number 18, it represents everything about that university. It's just a hard-nosed mentality that people down there they like to be associated and with, and Jacob Hester, he represents all that. So that is a way that we pay tribute to Jacob Hester.
So I say that because Lloyd Cushenberry is the only offensive lineman ever to be chosen to wear the number 18 for Louisiana State. Now he did it at a time when the numbers game was a little more structured, even in the college ranks at that point. And he didn't actually wear the number that season, but had a patch on his jersey. Denard, what does that tell you about Lloyd Cushenberry and what he's bringing to the Titans roster then as the man in the middle of the offensive line?
Well, you know what? He's going to bring a toughness to it. He's going to bring depth, and that's exactly what this offensive line unit they need this year is depth. Last year, and we don't need to continue to harp on how bad this offensive line played, but right now this is the right now the Achilles heel of this team. I thought it was the secondary when you talk about all the holes, but when you watch the way that this offensive line played last year, David, they have to go out there and continue to get better and add depth, but they gotta have some playmakers. And so what Cushenberry is going to add, we're not sold on Aaron Brewer. I know you and John been very critical on Aaron Brewer. You talk about his size. He's a Texas guy. But again, I mean, maybe this move can actually move Brewer back to his natural position. So again, I mean, it's anything will help. I mean, this offensive line at this point.
Well, Brewer has actually moved on. He is with the Miami Dolphins now on a 3-year contract as a free agent, which I thought 3 years was a bit surprising for him. But that's what happens this time of year. Guys are coming and going. John, it's tough to statistically quantify centers? Any insight you can give us on what Cushenberry might mean to the offensive line here?
I'll start out with a couple of not statistics, but numbers that I think are significant, and that is his height and weight. He is 6'4" and 315 pounds, and that is, as both of you guys have noted, a sizable upgrade over Aaron Brewer. You know, Aaron Brewer was you know, very good in the run game, you know, because he was athletic, he was mobile, he was quick on his feet. But it just didn't work nearly as well for Aaron Brewer in pass protection, because he was, you know, 6'1" and 290 pounds or so, and he just got overpowered far too often on the inside. Not going to happen nearly as much with Lloyd Cushenberry. Lloyd Cushenberry has given up one sack in each of the last 2 years, so that's a good stat for pass protection. And you have to figure that pass protection is going to be even more important if it's possible with Brian Callahan offense than it was, you know, under Mike Vrabel, because simply they're going to be throwing the ball more often. So I think that's a big step in the right direction there. You know, maybe some other PFF numbers. He had his best year last year. I think his overall grade was about 74. Easily his best and one of the better center marks in the league. I thought he was certainly the best center on the market that the Titans could get at the time. And I'll throw in one more number that sort of ties it back to what you guys were talking about earlier. He is, speaking of 18, that is his signing bonus Lloyd Cushenberry got this year, which set a record, I believe, for centers. And fully guaranteed money is 26, which also set a record for centers. So again, it's a situation where Titans very needy at the position, also have a lot of money. Okay, you put those two together, we're willing to pay a guy a lot of money to come in here. But again, I don't have a problem with that. That's, you know, you got to get your guy, you got to fill that hole with a good player. I think they've done that.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, the conversation happens all the time. You hear it said that, you know, there's not 32 quarterbacks in the world who are good enough to be starters in the NFL, right? And that's why when you get a franchise type quarterback, you hang on to them like grim death. And you know, when I think about it, certainly you look at it from the Titans' perspective, at least a historical perspective here, it feels like the same is true of centers, right? Like you just can't draft and develop a center for some reason. The Titans have been their best, and I alluded to this briefly last week. I think that when they have added proven veteran free agent centers, you just look at the 4 years that Kevin Mawai was the center here, which were the last 4 years of his career. You know, he was not a young man at that point, but 2006 through 2009, Titans ranked in the top 10 in rushing offense every year. Three different backs, Travis Henry, Lindale White, Chris Johnson, all had 1,000-yard seasons, you know, capped by Johnson's 2,000-yard campaign in 2009. Then they go through this long dry spell at center until Ben Jones shows up, and Ben Jones suddenly the Titans become a pretty ferocious running team again, and oh, by the way, you end up with another 2,000-yard rusher in Derrick Henry. Now, you know, Chris Johnson, Derrick Henry, very unique talent, certainly, but there, you know, there's a lot to be said for what was going on in the middle of the offensive line at that point, and guys making the right calls and doing, you know, sort of managing all the things. And I think even the average football fan doesn't understand or appreciate what a center is doing in there before the ball is snapped, and what he has to understand, what he has to handle. And so I think for the Titans to get a guy who's been a 4-year starter in this league, who is, to Denard's point, you know, if you're going to spend free agent bucks, you spend it on a guy coming off his first contract, and a guy who potentially still has his best days ahead of him. This is one of those things. It's not a sexy signing, but I think it's one that can make a real difference, particularly when you're talking about Peter Skoronski next to him on the left side right now. You've got one of last year's free agents, Daniel Brunskill, on the right side. You've done a lot now to shore up the inside of that line. And just look at what's going on around the league right now. The guards are getting paid like crazy. Denard, have you ever seen anything like this? Like the money that is going to guards right now? I mean, it's pretty clear that everybody's thinking you've got to have that middle of the line shored up, don't you think?
It's the offensive line. That's how you make it. That's the anchor of your team. In this day and age, David, it's all about offense. Is going out and getting these young, vibrant coaches. They want to push the ball. They want to play like it's Madden 2024. Throw 80 passes. But I'm telling you, the way that you win in this league, it's about your offense and your defensive line, your interior. You got to shore that up. And I mean, you're talking about this line is already better. With Skowronski, the Cushenberry, and Bronskill right there. I mean, right in the middle of your field. Now you go off, and let's say you at that seventh pick, you get Foshanu. I mean, imagine you got four great line, and then you go in and you get one more plug in. I mean, you're talking about probably one of the top offensive lines in the league, or has the potential to be.
If you can get a stud left, I mean, I think we all agree Andre Dillard can't be the left tackle again,
No,
right?
no, no.
John, are you putting him back there?
Am I putting Andre back there?
Yes.
No, I still suspect that before March 18th rolls around here, which guarantees 3 million more of Andre Dillard's contract, I think they're going to say goodbye to Andre Dillard, would be my guess. Although it does leave them with a good bit of dead money. But yeah, I think if you want to keep Andre Dillard and say, hey, there's got to be some talent there somewhere. This is a first round
Yeah.
pick. I can understand it maybe saying, okay, Bill Callahan maybe is going to be your guy to pull that
If
talent
anybody
out.
can fix him, right?
Right. Exactly. So maybe, but it's got to be difficult for the Titans to stomach saying, A, we're going to give this guy guaranteed 3 million more of his money in March after the season he did last year, and to have him be $10 million against the cap next year on what would probably be a swing tackle role, at best. Has got to grind them. But speaking of the of tackle and or excuse me, of the line and Cushenberry, I was just going to make one more point about him. He said he kind of struggled as a rookie, but he really credited the guy he credited to kind of giving him a great foundation and setting him on the right course, Mike Munchak, who was the Broncos offensive line coach at the time, praised Munchak very, very highly. And then when he was asked, what is he really looking forward to about playing with the Titans? First two words came out of his mouth, Bill Callahan. He talked again at length about what it'll be like to play for Bill Callahan. So I think it's good news for the Titans that he's got a foundation of Munchak and B that he is so eager to learn from Bill Callahan too. This guy seems like he's got his head on his shoulders very, very in a good spot. I'm not sure what words I'm looking for here.
If the offensive line struggled most in 2023, likely the cornerbacks struggled second most. Denard Chidobe-Awuzie probably doesn't fix everything that the secondary needs right now, but what does he bring to that unit?
Oh man, I've been a big fan of Woozie since his days in Dallas.
I think I remember you mentioning
Yeah,
him weeks
he's
before free
I,
agency as a guy you wanted to see here.
you know what, David and John, when you look at his resume, and this is what I love, and unfortunately corners are judged by interceptions. He doesn't have a lot of interceptions, but what he is, he's consistent. If you watch that film, Cincinnati, the last few years, you'll watch number 22 and watch where they line him up. He can play slot, he can play inside, and he's very instinctive. And not to mention what he's going to bring to this young secondary, he's going to bring experience. You bringing in Steve Jackson, my former teammate, Billy Ray Valentine, he's going to come in. He's going to make this team, this secondary, so much better. Why? Because you got these young corners that are still young. We haven't even seen Caleb Farley since he's got drafted. So we don't know what he's going to bring to the table. But when you bring in Chidobe Awuzie, what you're going to bring is a veteran. He's been in this league for a long time. He's 28 years old. And if you watch him, he is known as one of the best tackling corners in this league. And if, when you watch defensive back, there's nothing more dejecting or demoralizing than to watch a 5 yard hitch turn into a 50 yard scamper. That's not going to happen with Ajobi. And what you love about him, you can put him all over the field. He's a very versatile player. So he's going to bring, he makes this secondary so much better. They're going to go from 25th. I can see just with adding him on and his presence on the field, that can end up bumping them up, bumping them ahead a few slots because he's a difference maker. So
You talk about the tackling in 2018, 2019 with the Dallas Cowboys, and the Cowboys drafted him in the second round in 2017. But 2018 and 2019, he missed 20 tackles combined. In the 4 years since, he has missed 15 tackles. I mean, this is a guy who has sort of learned to do what he needs to do in this league, and I think that's an important thing to look at if you're a coach, that this is, you know, this guy took a weakness, addressed it, fixed it. You know, you can trust guys like that. Moving to the other side of the ball, John, you know, so much emphasis the last couple of years on having a different, two different types of backs in the running, in the running back room, and Derrick Henry, the big strong power back, and then they were always looking for the smaller, quicker, you know, catch passes out of the backfield back. Tony Pollard, pretty similar skill set to Tajae Spears, wouldn't you say? That the days of variety are gone for the Titans. They under Brian Callahan, they're looking for a specific type of running back now. And did they find it in Tony Pollard, don't you think?
I hope they did, because they gave him a, you know, a 3 year deal for 22 mil, which you know surprised me a little bit. I didn't necessarily think they were going to go out and get a high caliber back necessarily. I figured Tajae Spears would kind of be the main man, and you know that certainly they needed another guy, but I didn't know necessarily they needed a guy of that value. But I do think what one of the things they really want to be is less predictable. And that was one of the downsides of Derrick Henry. You know, and there certainly weren't many downsides to Derrick Henry, but it was fairly predictable. You know, when Derrick Henry was on the field, normally he was going to be involved in the play. He was going to run the Titans were going to run the ball more often than not, sometimes play action. But then when the other back came in the game, they were going to pass the ball more often than not. Now you've got a situation where you're not nearly as predictable, no matter whether it's Pollard in there or whether it's Tajae Spears in there. Because yeah, as you mentioned, they're similar backs. I do like, you know, Pollard, especially for a Brian Callahan offense, you know, because he has some a little bit of similarity anyway to a Joe Mixon type of guy who can come out of the backfield. And was very successful in Cincinnati doing that. You know, Tony Pollard was basically a receiver more than he was a running back coming out of college, and those skills are still very much evident in his game. So I think, and he's performed better. You know, he's performed best as part of a two-back system in his years in the league. That's clearly what we're going to see here with you know, with Spears and with Pollard. So I like the addition. It surprised me a little about how much they were willing to put into the running back spot, but I do think it's going to be a good pairing.
We mentioned that Aaron Brewer is in Miami now. We should also sort of run down some of the other departures. Sean Murphy Bunting is now with the Arizona Cardinals. The Houston Texans taking a bite out of the Titans, landing both DeNico Autry and Azeez Al-Shaair. And then, of course, we can't conclude things tonight without mentioning that Derrick Henry has followed a familiar path for Titans superstars, going to the Baltimore Ravens, who said that they really did try to trade for Henry before the trade deadline during the season, and thought they were going to get that deal done at some point, but they get Henry in what was a surprisingly vigorous running backs market. You know, the whole talk was going to be that you know, running backs are undervalued and these guys are all going to be out there, so nobody's going to get paid. But you saw very quickly Josh Jacobs and Austin Ekeler and Gus Edwards and a number of these guys go, and Henry was kind of one of the last of that group to sign. But Denard, Derrick Henry in Baltimore, does that hurt your feelings? Is that going to be hard to see him in purple?
Yeah, it is. But unfortunately, change is inevitable in this business. I wish him well. I think he's gonna have some great years in Baltimore, 2 great years in Baltimore. I thought they're gonna win with this. And this probably would be the difference, in getting that team over the hurdle. I just don't think they had a running game and everything was placed on Lamar's shoulders. With D. Henry, the king in town in Baltimore, you better watch out. I think Baltimore will come back even stronger next season with the king at helm.
Yeah, of course, following the way of Steve McNair, Derek Mason, Samori Roll. John, how much are the Titans going to hate playing against Denico Autry twice a year?
Yeah, I think that's not going to be pleasant because we know how riled up DeNico Autry would get every time he played the Colts for the Titans, because the Colts basically passed on him, let him move on to Tennessee, and he was extra stoked against Indianapolis. So I suspect we'll see that same kind of performance from DeNico Autry twice a year for the next couple of years.
And yep, we will see what comes next for the Titans in free agency, and we will talk about it all next week here on Believe in Titans. Thanks as always for listening.